Hey everybody, welcome to the TNT Wellness and Nutrition Podcast. I'm Thomas.
I'm Tyson.
I studied exercise physiology and competed in many various sports ranging from wrestling to ultra running. I use that knowledge to combine today's science with ancient wisdom to live an optimal lifestyle and spread that information onto the masses.
I have a degree in biology with an emphasis in neurobiology, physiology, and behavior. I'm a lifelong weightlifter and I'm obsessed with health and wellness. I want to pass the knowledge I've gained over the years on to everyone out there. Let's get this started.
Thank you for listening to the podcast. If you want to show your support, please rate and review on your favorite podcast provider, Apple Podcasts, Google Play, or SoundCloud. And sign up for all of our new content at tntwellnessandnutrition.com.
What's up, everybody? Welcome back to another episode of TNT Wellness and Nutrition Podcast. This is episode 37. This is part two of the Felicia Gualda interview. We titled it Getting Out of the Mud because that was a very consistent theme throughout. But first, let's do a little check-in. So, Tom, how's your week been?
So, I've been training for that marathon. Yesterday was supposed to be a day where I really tested myself. And my goal was to run 20 miles. I got 15 out of it. And from whatever reason, I'm not really sure, I just never had it. Like, my first mile was crap. My second mile was crap. Every single mile was just crap.
Did you prep good? Like, was it...
I thought so. I wasn't coming off a good night's sleep or anything like that. I don't know, just for whatever reason, just like, you know, some days you just don't have it. I like tried to push through, hoping by like mile five, like I'd hit, like break through that wall, and just never could. Mm. So by mile 15, I wasn't like dead. I probably could have kept going, but I just got to the point, I was like, you know what, screw this. I'm just done. I'm just going to go home.
Yeah, that sucks.
So I tried a couple different things. I was actually not really expecting to run yesterday because last time I checked the weather report, it was supposed to rain Monday through Thursday. So I didn't think I'd have the chance. And then I just woke up Tuesday and it was too nice of a day to like really skip out on it. So I was like, all right, let me make sure I get a nice run in. And I like carried my water bottle with me. It's the first time I've done that. Carrying like a full water bottle is a bit of a pain in the ass.
Hold on, you should tell them that's because you have to now, right? Something changed.
Yeah, so I checked at the race. So they're not giving out, like, they'll have aid stations with water and stuff like that, but you have to bring your own water bottle with you the entire time. This is something I wasn't aware of. I'm glad I read that small print before I like showed up for the race. So the only type of like water bottle I have is like a metal thermos. So it's already kind of heavy when it's empty. Like when it's full, it's probably like 2.5 pounds at least, maybe 3 pounds. And carrying that while you're like running uphill, not the easiest thing to do. So I'm going to go shopping this weekend, probably to like Big Five or like some sort of sporting goods store. Try to find like a belt, like a water bottle belt, something like that. So I have my hands free.
Yeah. So what do the like ultra marathon runners normally use?
There's a lot of stuff like that.
Okay, so belts and backpacks.
Yeah.
Okay.
I was looking into a backpack. They're a little bit more expensive. And the problem with the backpack is if I want to, like, refill it, I have to take that thing all the way off to refill it, and that's going to be a pain in the ass. And the hardest part about, like, running, especially when you get to, like, after 10 miles, is stopping and then starting again. Like, your legs just start to tighten up after that. So it's better just keep moving.
Momentum's your best friend.
Yeah, so I really don't want to, like, stop, take off this backpack. That's going to be, you know, 2-3 minutes of me at the aid station filling that damn thing up. So I'm trying to avoid that. Try to make my pauses as, like, little as possible. I don't need to catch my breath. That's never really been an issue. Like, my lungs are good. It's just, like, my leg muscles tightening up. And I'm definitely going to add some... So I did run with salt water, but I'm going to make sure, like... Probably bring some like salt packets with me, something like that, to make sure every time I refill that water bottle, it's gonna have a lot of salt in it, and do like a magnesium, some Epsom salt, and like my first drink.
I've heard people having salt pills like in their pockets. I've heard that before.
I know you can. Do they like sell salt pills, or do people?
I think they're like homemade.
Okay, like you just buy empty capsules.
Yeah, and pour salt. Yeah.
I guess I could do that too.
Yeah, I don't know. I've never done that, but I've heard.
I got a bunch of capsules. Like for my dog, like I empty out the capsules because she's so small. Mm-hmm. So I can just probably reuse some of those capsules.
Oh, for sure. Yeah, you can probably get like half a teaspoon inside a little decent sized capsule.
Yeah, that's something I'll look into.
Yeah, that is.
So what's new with you this week?
Well, I mean, that sucks with your training.
It's good. I'm going to do some like hard intensity workouts the next few days, like upper body, but mostly just to like tax my heart and lungs. And then my next like lower body hard day is either going to be Saturday or Sunday. I'm going to try and get that 20-mile run in.
Okay.
Depending on the weather. That's the only like factor that I need to like
take. But even if it's raining, will you get 20 miles indoors? I know that's not ideal, but...
Maybe. I might just do 12 miles through the mud or like try and do 15 miles through the mud.
Rather than 20 indoors?
Yeah.
Okay.
Because just running indoors doesn't really simulate outdoors as much. Okay. Like, you know, dealing with the elements, you got that wind, you got the mud, and then just running on uneven ground, you kind of just have to like stay more aware.
You don't think just seeing that number though of 20 miles total will help you mentally?
Not really, because when I did 15 miles flat on a treadmill, and then when I tried to go run 15 miles outside, I could definitely tell a difference.
Like, you just know it doesn't like correlate.
Yeah, not really. Okay. Especially because like if you're on a treadmill, it's way too controlled. You know, and then also, like, if you're running outside, you have to deal with other people. So, like, there's a lot of times when I was running yesterday, I had to stop because these paths were, like, kind of narrow. There's people out there walking. So I'd have to, like, stop, kind of figure out how to run around these people. Something I'm going to have to deal with during the race. So trying to simulate that experience as much as possible.
Okay. No, that makes sense. Yeah. But as far as what's new with me, not same old, same old. Like, you know, my wife's Groundhog's Day. Cut's still going good. I've recently, well, I guess if you listen to the podcast a few weeks ago, I mentioned I was going to reread a few books, and just because I wanted to get this knowledge down pat, and maybe you've noticed I haven't talked about it in the last three or four podcasts, because I'm definitely struggling with it. It's just been really hard for me to reread old material, and you mentioned it, like, when I read a book and the first three or four chapters are telling me that sugar's bad and fat's good, I'm like... Yeah, you know what I mean? Like, at this stage in the game, I'm like, what else is new, you know? And then telling me to sleep more, telling me to, you know, not eat six small meals a day, all this type of stuff. So I was kind of struggling with that. And a few people in my life and a few people online had recommended this book called You Can't Hurt Me by David Goggins. Have you heard of that?
I know the author, but I don't know the book.
So it's his book. He's, he's crazy. Honestly, crazy guy. He's a Navy SEAL. He's an ultra marathon runner. He does those like 100-mile races, 130-mile races, and it's just all about his story. And I'm about three quarters of the way through it now, and it's awesome. You know, I really thought, like, I wanted to reread those old books to get my knowledge down so I could be a better coach, so I could be a better example, so I could help guide people better through this process. But there's also a whole other side to this coaching stuff, and it's motivation and being that example, being that person that people can look up to. So that's where this book kind of, I think, is helping me. And it's just crazy how much I can like relate to this guy, you know. I mean, you've known me literally my whole life.
Yeah,
you know what I mean? And like, if you had to, I guess, put a word to how I attack things or how my mind works, like, how would you kind of describe my tendencies?
I mean, like, dedication, like, definitely focus, like, kind of like laser focus.
Yeah.
I mean, as you can tell, his meals don't change. Obsessed.
Yeah. So obsessed with stuff is, something that came up a lot in his first few chapters, I guess, was him talking about obsession and how he can, like, literally do the same things. Whatever it takes, he'll do it. And I can relate to that. And like you said, my meals don't change. And my lifestyle really doesn't change, and that's not because things in my life aren't changing. It's because I have a priority, and my priority is my health, is my training, is my diet, and I put that before everything else. That comes down to obsession. It's not about motivation. Like, motivation comes, motivation goes. This is something, before I even read this book, one of our clients, she's lost weight, she's done really good, but recently she's put on a few pounds, and she doesn't know why. She's kind of, I don't know, searching for answers, why she's not as motivated as she used to be. And, you know, I just kind of said, like, it's easy to lose those first 20, 30 pounds when you're kind of overweight, but once you start getting lower, it comes harder and harder, and you need to stop thinking about being motivated. I was like, what you need to do is become obsessed. Become obsessed with your health, become obsessed with regaining your health, and that way you can actually keep this pace, you know? And he brought that up, and I was like, yeah, no shit, I really like that. You know what I mean? Like, that's how I am. I am obsessed with these things. Now, whether that's healthy or not and everything else in your life, who knows? But for me, it works. Another thing that stands out is he's a black guy, and he grew up in I think it was Indiana. He grew up with a bunch of white folks. You know what I mean?
Indiana's pretty white.
Indiana's pretty white. Yeah, because Larry Bird's from Indiana, right? Yeah. So he grew up, I think Larry Bird's daughter like went to his high school. So he talked about being the other. That's what he termed it, right? And in a weird way, I can relate to that as well because, like, I'm a white guy. So I'm, like, Mr. Generic in that sense. But anyone who knows me in real life knows I'm not that small. And red hair, rosy cheeks. 24/7, 365. So
you kind of stand out in the crowd.
I stand out in a crowd, right? So even if I'm in a sea of white folks, you're still going to find me. Like, I'm the worst game of Where's Waldo you ever seen. You know what I mean? Like, there he is every time. It's like cheating. So I can relate to that from day one, growing up always being almost like a unicorn. Like, there's just not a lot of us out there. So I can relate to that. Thank God I wasn't small. I wasn't really picked on anything like that. But it's just, I can relate to standing out in crowds for sure. I know what that feels like. This other thing you talked about was, if you notice right now, I have this notebook in front of me. I know I've talked with one of my friends, David, about this a lot. I don't know if I talked to you about this a lot, but through our workouts, I kind of have a tendency, I think all humans do, to kind of, our mind chooses the path of least resistance. So there are some times during our workouts where you just kind of coast through it and you don't even realize it. Like, after the workout's done, you realize you had more in the tank.
I mean, that's just natural. Like, working out is unnatural. Like, you don't normally put your body through that much physical stress just for the hell of it.
Yes. So it's just not normal. So our mind will really trick us and be like, you know what? Like, if I'm doing curls, let's say like 40-pound dumbbells, in the middle of that set, my mind's going to be like, you know what? 40 pounds is enough. When really, if I was going to push my body, I could do 45. I could do 55. I could do 65 if I was really going to push it. And I have noticed the past few weeks, even the past few months, honestly, I had been coasting through some of my workouts. Me being, like, I would call myself a trained athlete. I've been doing this for, I guess, like 17 years now, almost. And it does take a lot of stimulus for me to grow. Like, you know that. Like, at this stage of the game, we're not going to get, like, newbie gains.
No, definitely not. Yeah. I mean, unless you're trying something completely new, that's just going to be mostly just learning a new motor pattern, not really, like, gains in strength.
Yeah, so, like, for us to make gains at this stage of the point, like, at this stage in our development, like, we really have to push our bodies. So I decided to start a journal with all my sets and reps and weights, and I did this last week, and I mentally went to these workouts trying to really kill myself. And I wrote down all my sets, wrote down all my reps, and that's going to be my baseline from here on out. I'm not going to do less than this. Every week from here on out, I'm going to do more or the same if I just simply can't do anymore. And it's working. I feel like a weight version. Like, I'm very sore. You know what I mean? Like, everywhere. And that's a great sign. You know, it's a great sign that I'm actually stimulating some growth. So that's what he talks about. He talks about callousing the mind. And I feel like that's where I was slipping a little bit. As much as I am, I don't know, Spartan-esque with my lifestyle, as much as I am, like, about that life, like, I was still cutting corners. And I noticed it, and I took the necessary steps to change that. So I'm glad that happened. And he also talked a lot about just the lifestyle in general, like, in America, I guess, with people living easy-ass lives and just not being uncomfortable at all. You know, people wake up in, like, satin sheets, and then they go to bed, and it's just an easy day for them. And there are certain things I do. There are certain things I tell people, like, you have to be comfortable with being uncomfortable. That's something I say a lot to people, and I genuinely believe it if you want to experience any sort of growth. So one thing I do a lot, or I do it every day, is I take ice-cold showers. And we've talked about this. Like, maybe ice cold showers help you burn more fat. Maybe they activate brown fat. Maybe it burns more calories. Okay. Maybe it helps with inflammation. Maybe it helps with recovery overall. Okay. Maybe not, right? But you know what ice cold showers are?
Really uncomfortable.
Really fucking uncomfortable, right? To this day. Like, I get in that shower and there's a moment every day and there's a test. Do I step into this cold water or don't I? No one's around, you know, but I do every day. I pass that test. And I think that's a great way to start the day. And that's a tip for anyone out there. Start your day with a test and pass that shit. I don't know. The book's been really motivational. I love it. I feel like in a scale of life, like, I feel like I'm Super Saiyan, like, level 1. And this dude's, like, Super Saiyan 3. You know what I mean? Like, he's, like, next level. He's definitely, I don't know. He's taken up some, like, mental space in my mind. And it's good. Like, I'm not, I guess I was like the king of my castle in my mind. Like I was the guy who would do anything. I was the guy who would push himself. But now I know that this other guy out there who will push himself even harder, who will literally die for what he wants to do. And now that he's in my mind, I have something else to strive for. And he better watch out. I'm coming for his ass. So
you're going to go for a 130 mile
run? Fuck it, man. I'll do it, man. Ask me if I can do something. I'll say yes, straight up.
So is it just like a motivational book, or are there a bunch of like health and training tips too?
No, no health, no training tips. It's an autobiography, really. It's really just about his childhood, which was extremely messed up. Actually, really sad. Really, really sad childhood. And then just how he used his, I don't know, just his mental strength to get through crazy challenges. Like he just kind of woke up one day and ran a 100-mile marathon and almost died.
Damn.
Like didn't train for it, nothing. You know what I mean? So I recommend the book, really. If you want to switch up, you know, the books and listen to something that's not nutrition-based. Yeah, I think it's really interesting. I recommend it out there. And thank you for all the people out there who did recommend it to me. I really appreciate that. Yeah, I'll talk about it more next week. I'll have it finished by next week for sure.
Okay, good.
Yeah.
Yeah, I just finished that cancer book, and now I'm on to The Dorito Effect, which is...
Oh, you're reading that?
Yeah.
Dude, one of us needed to read that.
So far, it's kind of interesting, but... It's mostly just like how we replace natural flavors with artificial flavors and how that just tricked our mind and getting us addicted to like fake foods. So basically like it all started with the Dorito as the first food of it.
And is that true, or is that just his like title of the book?
This goes back to the 60s, and this was like the first like major example of like
artificial
flavoring.
Oh, okay.
So
I didn't know Doritos have been around since the 60s.
It's either 60s or 70s.
Dang, I didn't even know that.
So it first started as a like tortilla chip, and okay. It was like killing it in the Southwest, you know, where there's Mexican foods. But the rest of the country wasn't really catching on because they're like, what's a tortilla chip? Like, you know, TV wasn't super popular back then. Like, there weren't Taco Bells everywhere. So not everybody knew what a tortilla chip was. So the next evolution of it is, I'm going to make this tortilla chip taste like a taco. So that tricked our brain into thinking we're getting all the food from a taco, but we're not. You're just getting corn, basically. Yeah. But now your brain starts to think, oh, you're getting some ground beef, you're getting some tomatoes, you're getting some lettuce and all these other things. And now that there's those artificial flavors, your body's going to seek those out, thinking it's getting the nutrition with it, but it's not. So like an orange soda, you're getting the same nutrition as orange juice in your brain, when that's completely not the case.
Okay.
And that's kind of where this book goes into.
That's so interesting. A lot of people don't think about that, you know? Like, why people crave these certain things that they know are shitty. Like, everyone knows a Dorito shit.
Well, we have taste buds for a reason.
Mm-hmm.
And that's because, like, stuff that's healthy for us is supposed to taste good. Stuff that's not is supposed to taste like shit. But...
Yeah, go eat kale, folks. Tell me how that tastes.
Yeah, like, that's just kind of what it goes into, is just, like, why we crave certain things. Yeah. I mean, non-drug related, obviously. Yeah. And it's just kind of crazy how this, like, it's been hijacked and it keeps getting worse and worse.
Yeah, that's very interesting. I'm glad. Yeah, tell me how that goes.
Yeah, I'm...
Is it a long book?
Not very long. I'll be through it by the end of next week.
Okay, yeah. Cool. Yeah, so we can talk about it then, too.
I'll probably finish it on my next long run.
Okay, cool. All right, so I guess we can get into part two of the interview with Felicia. And we kind of started, or we ended last week's podcast talking about, like, developmental patterns and our, like, responses to stress and how those can be tied back to childhood experiences and kind of how they're all unique. They can be case by case, and how she goes about talking to her clients and breaking down their kind of just innate defense mechanisms and hopefully to help them heal through various traumas they've had throughout their lives. So I hope you guys listen. I hope you guys like it. And yeah, here we go. TNT, wellnessandnutrition.com, whole food nutrition rediscovered. If you are struggling looking to improve your health or optimize your lifestyle, you can sign up for a custom meal plan on our website, TNTwellnessandnutrition.com. Back to today's topic. So is one of your big, I guess, techniques is identifying these defenses and then slowly breaking them down? Is that what you would do with somebody?
Actually happening, and that doesn't mean that you need to know the full story of when it was formed and when it happened. your current life circumstances and things that are triggering you now are your entry points. So it's not like your classic psychology where you have to find the root situation and work from there. We're actually using our present realities to be able to shift these things. So yes, the first one would definitely be acknowledging how you are responding to triggers, acknowledging what the constant thought patterns that you have are, which is just as simple as being like, huh, like I'm noticing that I'm being really critical of myself right now. Huh, like I'm noticing that I just felt shame towards myself. Because most of the time what's happening is we're actually fixated in those experiences where we don't have awareness around them. We just know that we are angry or we are shameful or we are critical, rather than taking a step back and being able to to watch that we are doing that rather than just be that reaction. And it seems like a very subtle step, but it's huge. It's a huge perspective change, and it's going to give you a very different vantage point on your life. And from that place, there's a lot more flexibility in working with these patterns.
So how do you start to identify these problems? Is that through just meditation or what is it, self-introspection?
Meditation. Again, I like staying away from that word. I would say more self-reflection.
Self-reflection, okay.
Yeah, which you can do sitting in a quiet room alone by yourself. And you can also do it out in the world in real life by also noticing especially the triggers, the things that are setting you off, and how you are responding to those triggers. So, you know, I know we talked a little bit about the road rage one, which is going to be more of an aggressive tendency, but I want to touch on the fact that there are other tendencies as well, and different people learn to use different strategies, different defensive strategies when they are younger. So to give you an example of what that might look like, because I think we have a tendency to think that everyone's world looks exactly like our world. That's why a lot of conflict happens and a lot of people can't understand each other, because we're kind of imposing our reality on other people. So, you know, you think about a group of people, your friends, or just, you know, people you know in life, and imagine one of your friends or one of these people who is, let's say, shamed in some way, or somebody speaking to them in a way that's very derogatory or aggressive. You know, how many of us know people who will hear that and collapse into a pile of tears? And there's really just no getting up from that, and it's just this, like, total collapse. And then how many of us know people who would, you know, somebody would treat them like that and they would get angry and they would fight back? You know, another one might be that person would just walk away, like not even be able to handle that kind of abuse and just walk away from it. Or all of a sudden, it's like no one's home anymore. They've just kind of floated away somewhere else and you can't even feel them there anymore. Or maybe you hear that and you're like, oh, wow, I agree with this person. Like, I am a piece of shit. Like, I do this. I do feel like I'm not good enough. And you internally shame yourself. So it's the same situation. It's the same criticism or the same attack. And there are going to be different people who respond to that and react to that in very different ways. So just knowing that, I think, is something that can be huge and really really cool when we start looking at people together as a community and how we relate to one another, just understanding that we have these different reactions that we use. And it depends, again, it goes back to childhood and what reactions worked for us and what responses worked for us best when we were young and at what time period we needed to develop those strategies, because I think that's going to have a huge impact as well.
Yeah. Well, I mean, obviously you put in the work and you've kind of self-reflected on the defenses you built up as a child. So with that scenario you just laid out, somebody's attacking you verbally, the old you, you know, say 5 years ago, how would they respond? And how would the current version of yourself respond? Like, what changed?
For me personally?
Yeah.
Okay, let me think about this one. little piece of my own personal experience. I think for me, my biggest pattern was self-criticism. That's been a large piece that I've been working. So if I looked at my life 5 years ago, when somebody would say something to me that was aggressive or derogatory, I would take that and I would say, I would like find all the pieces of that that I thought was true and then beat myself up even more on top of what I was actually getting from that person. And rather than that being empowering for me or wanting me to use that to make a shift in my life, I would actually just get lost in these thought loops of like, wow, like, this really is shitty. I'm never getting out of this. Like, I think this about myself too. They're right. Like, this sucks. Like, and just kind of getting lost in that story of like not good enough. And so what has shifted for me is that, first of all, that kind of treatment doesn't trigger me in the same way. So sometimes it doesn't even act as a trigger. It's not putting me in overwhelm or making me upset. I'm able to look at the situation a little bit differently. So I'll be able to, one, maybe look at the situation from a perspective that's not emotional, that's more like, okay, is there something that I actually could be doing differently that would be more beneficial to this situation and this relationship? And how do I put that into action and start thinking critically about that? Or the situation where it is triggering to me because, you know, I'm not perfect, I'm human, I'm still working through a lot of these pieces myself. I'm going to watch my reaction to that and notice that, wow, that really activated something in me that feels highly critical of myself. And so what can I do with that now? Like, first of all, okay, I'm noticing, wow, like I'm being really mean to myself. Can I have compassion for that piece? Can I have compassion for that part of me that has learned to beat myself up over and over and over again? And to just sit with that and not make it wrong and not actually trying to change or hate that I'm having that reaction, but just to notice that it doesn't feel good. It feels really uncomfortable. And I can have compassion for myself. It's like if you were to watch that same thing play out with two little kids in front of you and you saw how much that kid was beating themselves up, you wouldn't go up to them and be like, hey, you need to stop this right now. Like, you got to, like, change this. I mean, at least I would hope that would not be the response you'd have. You'd want to come up to them and have compassion for what they're going through, you know, without finding the healthy balance between commiserating with them and pushing them to change what is already occurring. Because, again, what that does is you're resisting what's there, which keeps it stuck in place. So the whole thing is, you know, I would identify what's happening, watch what's happened, become the witness to my own experience by even naming it to myself, maybe out loud or internally, say like, I'm feeling this feeling right now, or I'm noticing these thoughts. And then you have compassion for that, and developing or cultivating compassion is a skill in itself too. And that's another self practice that I've been developing for a long time now, and working in, and it deepens eventually. It's not easy at the beginning truly to say, I have love for myself, because a lot of experiences we have don't feel good. And it's kind of easier to go the pathway that's more familiar, which might be to shame yourself or to shame other people and to get more aggressive and direct it outwards. That goes more into the victim mentality, where you're blaming the circumstances of your life on the people around you and the things that are happening, rather than to go internal and find out what's really going on. And a lot of the times underneath aggression is fear, is a huge amount of fear, but it's buried so deep in the subconscious, which, of course, because it wasn't safe to have that at some point in your life, and the only natural response for certain individuals was to go to aggression and was to go to the power of will and willing through things and using that as the foundation to build their life from.
Oh, yeah, you're talking to Mr. Willpower right now. I can relate to that as far as that's my jam. And you said a word earlier that kind of stuck out to me, and that was just balance. And as far as being critical and recognizing a problem, but not being, I guess, so harsh and uncompassionate that you push people away and kind of just break them down further. Is that something you experience a lot, I guess, with your clients, like kind of balancing that out of getting people to realize what's going on, but not pushing too hard?
Yeah, and going back to Will also, I do think there is a place for it, and it's not something that you want to go away. And I'll actually name that with a lot of these defensive patterns, there is a positive side to them. There is something that can actually be very beneficial to your life through all of these. That's why you're not trying to beat it out of yourself. You're not trying to exert total will to change things. It goes back to that witness again and noticing what's there. And with, I guess, with more of that aggressive pattern, and they all have different needs at the core, but with this one specifically, since we're on this one, that particular, the need for it within that strategy is to feel like you can trust another person and be, I guess, contained or held to some degree. One of the reasons why that pattern gets developed earlier in life, and this isn't, you know, necessarily universal, but it's that there isn't a safe container. There isn't a safe place to operate from. So you might go to Will to create a sense of safety. And with a lot of these patterns, it goes back to a sense of safety, which is kind of what we're talking about when we're talking about survival, right?
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
It does make sense, yeah.
Well, yeah, these all seem like different tools. And if you're using them correctly, it seems like they're beneficial, but it seems like a lot of people are using these patterns all the time when they should be using a different one. Like, if your life is, like, physically threatened, maybe you should be angry and you should fight back. But if somebody cuts you in line at the grocery store, that's probably not the right response. Your life isn't threatened in that situation.
Yeah, perfect. That's, like, I love that you're seeing that, too, because there's an importance and something so necessary about these patterns, and like you're saying, there is a time and a place that they are absolutely the thing that is necessary and the thing that we need to revert to. And especially when we were younger, those patterns and those behavioral responses were actually the things that got us to where we are standing now in our lives. So if you think about it in that way, there's just, it grows the capacity to really honor those things rather than wanting to just change them. So that's where it starts, is understanding, like, truly what they did for you and how far they got you. And that's, you know, that's a good base for growing that compassion, that self-compassion muscle as well. And then coming back to your adult life, so, you know, obviously what we're seeing is there are a lot of people that are now stuck in their defensive patterns to the point where it's now detrimental to their life rather than helpful. So what's happening is we don't exist in a culture that supports, I guess, the integration of those patterns in adult life. There just weren't people around to show us and to teach us and to have compassion. You know, because how can that happen if there's people stuck in their patterns, their defensive patterns all the time? We're not going to be able to support each other and help each other heal from that place. It's just not possible. Yeah, I guess part of what I'm doing with this work is I'm creating a space where those patterns can unravel by first seeing them, which is virtually what I'm doing, is I'm holding up a mirror for people to see what's happening, and from there, we're unraveling them by having compassion for them and having compassion for how they originated in the first place, how they served you in some way. And so what happens is then our adult develops. So, you know, we're all walking around in these grown-up bodies thinking that we're adults and we're being triggered into our child parts all of the time, a lot of the time. You know, there's people who don't come out of their patterns through their whole life sometimes. So we're growing the adult, which is the capacity to see and notice these younger parts of ourselves that are defended or triggered or overwhelmed, and to honor them and to have love for them. And from there, your adult grows, which means you have more access to this state of well-being. And if you're resting in this state of well-being more and more and more and more and more, as you heal more and more and more, you're now going to be taking action in the world from a very different place that you may have been sitting previous to that, when you're acting from defense without actually even knowing it, because it's so subconscious at this point. So if you think about, let me use an example here. So we've been talking a lot about the aggressive pattern. So if you're constantly, and not saying that all people are all the time, this again is going to vary from person to person, and the strategies we use will also vary. There's not just one for each person. I believe that we all use several of them, and people have a primary. But if you are now walking around in the world not recognizing that this pattern is just on in the background, this defense is just on, you're going to approach scenarios where you are expecting, on some level, a threat. And so if you're subconsciously expecting a threat, and you're acting from maybe a an aggressive defense, then it's going to be a lot more common that you're showing up in a way that's very, like, coming at people, or showing up in a very big way that might eventually push people away, which then confirms the reality that it's not safe to trust other people, which perpetuates the whole negative feedback loop, which is going to impact the life that you have around you. So now if you're healing this pattern and you're showing up in life from this place that's more resting in your adult self, in a state of well-being, you're not going to act in a way that perceives other people or the world as a threat. So the situations and experiences that you attract to your life are going to be exponentially different than the ones that you were previously not recognizing where you were creating from. So I guess that's kind of the power of this, is that, and that's where, you know, your external reality really begins to shift, because you're sitting in a very different place than you were in the past.
Yeah, that's a powerful tool.
So after you hold up the mirror and get people mindful of these patterns, what's the next step?
Again, it varies so much from person to person. But it's about, I would say, one of the primary underlying things is establishing safety, a sense of safety and a sense of safe connection, especially with other people. One of the tools that I use in my practice is called attachment work, or you may have heard it called adult attachment repair, which naturally I found brings up the defensive patterns as well, and there's an overlap between the two. What we're doing is we're actually establishing a safe relationship. You're establishing a place where it's actually safe for them to have an expression of what their needs are, to have an expression of what emotional states are going on in the background, to create a space where, you know, it's not a threat to have a natural emotional response. Or it's recognized that the response you're having might even be a shutdown, might even be that, like, you don't think you have emotional responses to things. And that might be the starting place there. So it's not about trying to change anyone's reality. It's about seeing where they're, like, truly where they are in their reality, reflecting that back, and then having compassion for that, and giving specific evidence, new information, treatment to those parts of the self that are believing a certain reality because they haven't gotten any other kind of information through their whole existence. And so getting that kind of feedback and different information and safety and all of these things all contribute to those parts of ourselves integrating back into the whole. So in a sense, it's like there's these unprocessed emotional experiences that we're holding on to and not recognizing. And that's why I call it integration coaching, because it's about bringing these things to the surface and integrating them rather than trying to change them or suppress them or will through them or change the external reality to fix them. Yeah, it's really about integrating them into wholeness, back into wholeness.
You know, you're making me think of a very specific person in my life, somebody who, gosh, I don't know how I'm going to talk about it, but not dime her out in the same sentence. But, so I've helped her. Obviously, we are like the health guys. So had her work out, lost a ton of weight, had her eating right. She's healthier today than she's ever been in her life. But she is in a quite unhealthy relationship. And her husband is not the nicest. And I know he'll say mean things to her, and she'll kind of turn that around on herself, and she'll believe the things he says. Mm-hmm. What would be you don't have to give away all your secrets, but the initial step to kind of realize, or the advice to this person that, you know, you are a good person and what he's saying isn't true, even if you might think it is?
I guess my first suggestion would be to read a book called Attached, which is one of my absolute favorite books. I don't have the author for you, but I can look that up after this.
It's just attached, just one word?
Attached.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so I think number one, just giving ourselves information about what's actually happening is going to be a huge deal, because it might not matter. You know, obviously you care about this person, and I want to acknowledge that, and I think it's really beautiful that you're wanting to help them. Especially because you're recognizing, you know, what this person is going through and how that's impacting her life. You're getting to see also how it's crazy. You know, we can say so many things to a person, and if they believe a certain thing about themselves, it can be really challenging to shift that. And in this situation, I would say that the attachment system is pretty relevant. And it goes back to, again, the kinds of relationships that we had with our caretakers. And a lot of the times, you know, it isn't always obvious what an insecure bond looks like, especially when it's like certain parenting styles or things are normalized in our culture. I'd say the best thing would be to read about that book and learn about what type of attachment style you have, because it's going to explain exactly why we choose certain relationships and how they might mimic kind of relationships that we had when we were younger. And so, you know, say when we're younger, I'm trying to think of an example, and as kids, we don't have the capacity, or maybe the mental capacity or the reasoning capacity when we're young, to work out that, say, when, you know, mom or dad came home angry from work one day and yelled at us, that kid isn't necessarily going to recognize, like, oh, mom or dad had a bad day today. They're just going to see, this is the person that I need to be in connection with, and I'm making them upset right now. There must be something wrong with me, because there isn't an option to say there's something wrong with them. We need that person. So then it creates a pattern of shaming the self to stay safe, actually, because that keeps you in connection with mom or dad or with caretakers. And so the idea gets so ingrained that it starts to feel true, and it starts to feel like that's the only thing. And if you are living from that belief in the background, then of course you're going to attract a relationship where you're actually treated in that same way. That's, again, the negative feedback loop. So if you're thinking these things, or you're shaming yourself, then you're going to put out, it's like you're almost putting out a vibe, or you're going to act in certain ways where you then get a person that confirms that reality, that you shame yourself, or you're not good enough, or something's wrong with you in some way, and then it just goes on and on. So I guess the out would be number one, seeing what's happening, like seeing that you are shaming yourself, and that isn't the ultimate reality. It's a belief that was created out of necessity to survive when you're younger. And from there, finding a person, I would say, who's grown their capacity to sit in their adult, to be in that well-being space, who can create a sense of safety for that person. Because their reality is that connection isn't safe. And being in a reality that confirms their beliefs, which is the shame, is so normal that there is a comfort in that. And that's why it keeps repeating, because that pattern got you to where you are in life now. It worked. So it's challenging to want to step out of that. That's where, like, you know, you coming in and wanting the best for her and, like, saying positive things, like, I'm sure that's helping. But when you're seeing that maybe sometimes she's not believing you, just recognizing that that's the reason why, you know, maybe even diving deeper into a little bit of that, like honoring the parts of herself that kept her safe, like the part that shamed herself, like, was actually a godsend at a certain point in her life, would be really helpful. Does that kind of answer your question?
Shit, that better answers my question. That was great. Yeah, I wish I was that articulate, and I could honestly, I'm going to send her your way, and definitely to that book for sure, and
thank you.
It's amazing, like, I always say this, like, what our bodies and our minds can get used to. So, like, what is considered normal from the outside looking in is hell, but that person's so used to it, that's just their life.
Yeah, it's because that gave them a partial sense of safety at some point. So it's going to be the thing that they return to over and over, because subconsciously they know it worked.
Yeah.
And they're going to keep running that pattern until there is a pattern interrupt, which again comes back to these self-reflective practices, because if you start noticing how you treat yourself, you are getting to see that you are not your pattern. You aren't your beliefs. It is a strategy that you used that kept you safe and got you to where you are now. And that's a huge differentiation from being fixated and feeling helpless in the pattern or helpless in your own life.
Yeah, that sounds really powerful. And I don't think I've ever heard anybody put it into terms like that. That makes total sense. Is the name of the book Attached, The New Science of Adult Attachment and How It Can Help You Find and Keep Love?
Yes, that sounds right. What's the author?
Amir Levine and Rachel Heller.
Yep, that's the one.
Okay.
I want to suggest another book as well that's been very helpful in my own journey and my own growth, and that's called The 5 Personality Patterns by Stephen Kessler. And that goes more into the specific types of patterns that we develop when we're younger and how that plays out into our adult lives. And it is it's just mind-boggling. You know, the first time I read it, I kind of found the ones that was like, oh my God, that happened when I was young. That happened when I was young. That happened when I was young. This is my life. They know my whole life. Like, this is how I think. This is how I show up. Like, these are the things that are playing out in my adult life. It's just crazy to be able to see and be like, wow, there's nothing wrong with me. This is just a strategy I used. It flips your whole world upside down when you start seeing things from this vantage point. It makes it so much easier to get yourself out of that mud puddle.
You know what? I'm going to be 100% honest. I'm not ready for that shit. I'm so built into my little world right now. Like, I just saw the Matrix with the whole nutrition side. Man, I can't go down your road yet. I'm not ready.
Yeah. And, you know, I want to honor that, because pacing is a part of that, is a part of all of this also. You know, it's not about trying to force anything on anyone or change anyone's world. I think everybody has a natural pacing and a natural timing. And, you know, I don't think everyone's story looks exactly the same. So I think it's important to listen to that and pay attention to that too. And if that's what feels good for you, then absolutely stick with that. Because it sounds like, you know, what you guys are doing and what you're putting out with this podcast and with your work is it's a part of the equation. It's all connected, and I think that's a starting point for some people. That's an entry point, whereas maybe my entry point looked a little bit different. Do you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
I think we're all going to the same place, and everyone has their own timing on that path, but I do think that feeling whole is the thing that is ultimately accessible to everyone, however you might find that.
Oh, yeah. I agree. 100%.
Yeah, the way I like to look at just, like, health and just overall well-being is kind of like a report card in school where you have a bunch of different subjects, and the goal is to be on the honor roll. Either have straight A's or, you know, all A's and B's. So the way I do it is I just work on, okay, what's a D? Let me get that up to a B or an A. And then I move, after I get that mastered, move on to the next one. And then just kind of going on from there and there. I think this is definitely going to be the next subject that I focus on.
Yeah, you do it, not me. Yeah, you do it. I'm too worried about looking good without clothes on. I'm too worried about that. Yeah.
I love it.
So, yeah, this has been a lot of great information, a lot of just kind of eye-opening information that not a lot of people are out there talking about, and it's very powerful stuff. So do you have any, like, tips out there that somebody can start today if they're trying to get into this new way of thinking?
Absolutely. I would say the number one thing that you can do right now is to start noticing everything that's going on in your head or in your emotional state or in your physical body. Just notice and name it to yourself. I feel this. I feel that, whether that means that's a thought or an emotion or a sensation in your body. Just become the witness without judgment, without any judgment, even if it's not a comfortable feeling.
That's it. And that's hard for a lot of people, so it's a big ask in its own way.
Absolutely. And it's, you know, it's a skill set. Like anything else, it's going to develop over time. It's incremental. So the biggest part of that is to go easy on yourself. It's not going to look perfect at the very beginning. And at the same time, it is perfect just by however much you're able to do that in this moment.
Boom. Thank you so much for being on. I really appreciate it. It was awesome.
Yeah, you're welcome. Thank you so much for having me on. This was really fun. It was really cool to connect with you all.
Cool.
So how can people reach you?
So right now, the easiest way would probably be through my Yelp page, which is my full name, Felicia Gualda, intuitive healer and integration coach. And all my contact information is going to be on there. I have an office located in Encinitas, which is North County, San Diego. And I hope to connect with some of you.
And you do like online consultations, or it all have to be in person?
No, I do both. I do over the computer. I use Zoom. That's absolutely accessible for this work as well.
Perfect.
Okay, great. Well, thank you so much for your time and all this valuable information. I'm sure, I hope our listeners get as much benefits from this as we have.
Yeah, you're welcome. Thank you so much.
So Felicia's tip of the week this week was great, so I'm not going to do one. I don't want her to put myself to shame. So let's just go on with the close.
Yeah. So thank you for listening to this podcast. You can find us at tntwellnessandnutrition.com. Any questions, comments, or concerns, you can email us at tntwellnessandnutrition@gmail.com. You can find us on all social media, so Facebook, Instagram, Twitter. If you have any questions or anything, please reach out.
Please don't forget to rate and subscribe and tell all your friends about the podcast. Subscribe to the website as well. You get all the new articles and all the podcasts from there as well. I hope everybody has a happy and healthy week.